the way you guys eat pizza is really different to how we eat pizza.
How you eat pizza?
Well, we all like thin crust a lot. We also all like the it to be very saucy.
Thin crust, nah.
Yeah.
I'm with her on this one.
Nah, what is that?
Because it's just extra. It's just too chunky. It's not.
Yeah, it's like extra bread. It's like you're eating a piece of bread.
Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Next Stage podcast. In this episode, we have all day breakfast theater. Today we have with us three members out of four. We have all the A's, as Toby so graciously points out throughout the episode. Have a listen.
Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Next Stage Theater. And in this one, we're going to be meeting with three out of four members of all day breakfast theater. Now, I know their name sounds a bit weird, but we'll get into that in a bit. Today with us, we have Arthur, Aiden, and Anna. Say hi, everyone.
Hello. Hello.
All right. So are you guys ready to get this show on the road?
Oui. Yes, always.
All right. So tell us a bit about the beginnings of All Day Breakfast Theatre. Like, how did you guys all meet? Where did the name come from? Like, that little, nice little phase before this baby is born.
I guess we're very fortunate enough that we got the opportunity to go on the MA acting course at Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, and this is obviously all going on during COVID. So we kind of met there and we became friends first more than anything, as it was kind of a little bubble. We got to just have fun with each other in class, which we didn't get to do in our normal day lives, which was just great fun. Yeah. And then when it came to having to decide groups for our final production, it was quite an easy choice, really. It kind of just fell into place.
Yeah, I think especially because, like, I think we'd always looked at it, I guess, in terms of longevity as opposed to, like, our third performance being like that. Like, we've got to make a show for it, but it was more about making the company. And I feel like, yeah, the best place to make theatre is with the people that you love spending the most time with. So it kind of makes, do you know what I mean? No, but it is that, you know, if you're spending all day every day with these people, you got to love them, you know, through thick and thin and for everything that they come with. And I think that does show in how we make theatre, and that we are quite, like, ensemble based as a company, and quite, yeah, collective and nice and mushy. Anything to add? But our name,
we've got to talk about the name. There is a good story behind it. Well, we think it's a good story behind the name.
Yeah, I am definitely sure it's a good story.
We've had our guesses earlier, haven't we? We had a meeting earlier. We'll keep it to ourselves and we'll try and we'll hear what you got to say. Go on.
Tell us the story.
So it's a shame Rory's not here, because the story revolves around Rory, and kind of he says it with so much emotion, because to this day,
very
it
passionate.
Rattles him up, doesn't it? So angry about it.
He still has the letter. So one day, we was on a lunch break. We was on our lunch and we went to...
We're doing a production in the...
Production 2?
It was the production called Things Lost. Because we're mates, we just went out for lunch every day, get at a co-op and then go back and sit at Lippa. But this one day...
on that fatal morning.
This man had bought what he thought was an all-day breakfast baguette. And I'll tell you what, he was so excited. Smile from ear to ear, the beam on his face. He was so... Like,
the man being Rory, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Go on, I'll pass it on to you, Stacey. You finish the story up. You've got to do the emphasis in that Rory does that.
Yeah. So, you've got to remember, we were there probably since 9 a.m, starving, lunch break. Oh, we're exhausted. He comes in thinking, what do I get? I'm so hungry. And he thinks, okay, all day, what was it? All day breakfast,
all day breakfast.
Like roll.
All day breakfast roll. Warm from co-op.
Oh, it was Walls nice. As well. Name and shame. It was Walls. We will name and shame because they're expecting that it was. All day breakfast baguette. Rory pulls it out and it's just a sausage sandwich.
Does that, like, the most disappointing moment of... I don't know.
Like, so mismarketed, and then thus the anger came. Like, he was enraged, absolute fuming.
So we were all having lunch together, and we started debating what would actually go, or what's supposed to go in an all-day, like, baguette or, like,
what
roll.
What should be on there.
What should be on there. And then what's essential in an all-day, like, breakfast, or, like, for all-day breakfast. And then we just kind of thoughts first? What, how did we even? We just went.
I think I jokingly went, oh, let's just call our theatre company that, and then everyone around went, yep, like in unanimous decisions. And
that's it.
I hated it. I absolutely hated the name for the first month. I was like, please, let's change it. But it just,
the more it was there, the more I was like, I don't.
We agreed to have it as a draft.
Yeah.
But the more time went on, the more like we liked it.
Placeholder just there to just be like, yeah, we'll find something else. But yeah, it was like, we just, you know what? It. That's what we want.
we've had tweets saying like, I just had the most abysmal breakfast at All Day Breakfast Theatre, and you're like, this isn't us.
Or like some Instagram accounts that are followers will be like breakfast specific related accounts. We're like, I mean, look, we could pair up if we want to do a brunch time show and you supply the all day breakfast, we'll supply the theatre. That sounds like a cushy little partnership that we could sort out. So if there's anyone out,
you know, give us a call.
you are coming out early with the sponsorship deals, you are.
Yeah. And who don't want an all day breakfast?
That's a very fair point.
It's there all day.
Do you know, sometimes there's moments like these where I wish podcasts could be viewed, because there's just a Greta breaking down in the corner of the meeting. Because I had a much tamer idea. I thought it was just like, oh yeah, we went out for brunch and was like, ooh, yeah. No, like, just scandal in the streets of blooming Liverpool Co-op.
It seems like we found a trend here, Toby. Everyone who has like a weird, funny name, which we're like intrigued with, and like, tell us a story about this.
Yeah.
Everyone always says, it was meant to be a placeholder. We were meant to change it. No one ever changes it.
We had a Simone, she's a theatre director, practitioner, just about does everything in Malta. And she has a theatre company called like Do Theatre. And I was like, oh, there must be some weird artistic thing behind that. She was like, no, it's just the word do, as in D-O, funky. That's it. And I, honestly, sometimes going to university really does screw you up when it comes to thinking of these things, which is going to be proven by our next question, possibly, about, this was something that Greta picked up on, but I'm quite intrigued by it as well. The logo. I've never seen so much detail go into a fried egg.
We demanded the detail as well. Like,
okay, I mean, this is.
It was drafts. It was drafts upon drafts, and
we wanted more detail on the egg. We were like, no, we need the egg to look more like a moon, but still definitely an egg. So the yolk needs to be the moon itself, like a crater kind of. But you still need the egg. And then the sun above, obviously. So, because it's cooking the egg.
Yeah. Gotta have a little bit of pepper.
Obviously.
Naturally. You know. Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. Yes. We were talking about it just beforehand, and me and Aiden were like, oh, so why did we make this logo? Because it was a year ago back. And honestly, I think it was just a moment of madness. We sat down for an hour and a half just messaging this person on Fiverr.
Well, none of us were like
demanding this and this.
Yeah, like we can't draw, and I think with that naturally just comes, you've got yourself on your back foot, because it's like, I might have really cool ideas, but I can't draw them. So
yeah,
Fiverr had always been a hit or miss place. You're like, you know what? We got a budget to work with for getting a logo in, so let's have a look. Because at the same time, they are the things that like, they matter as well. Like, so if you pay them,
having
pay,
a good logo like builds your brand identity.
Yeah, like pay the money for it.
Things which like define you as you.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's kind of like if you pay 20 quid for a pair of trainers and they rip in a month's time. Like, yeah, you did pay 20 quid though, so there's kind of that. Anyway, so it was on Fiverr. We found something that was like a good price. We kind of liked the look of their drawings, and then we was like, we can't go really cheesy breakfast related, like breakfast on a plate. We kind of don't want to do that. We was like, we kind of. You even ask it, and you even mentioned it in your emails. Like, oh, you're a little bit eccentric, and what was it? Something wonderful. I think you called it. You know, was it made me laugh? I was like, I guess that is. We wanted the logo, I guess, to kind of summarize also, I guess, who we are as people as well. You kind of do get a sense of. I think if you look at the logo, it kind of gives you what to expect if you was kind of going to come in the room and work with us. I think.
Mm. Yeah, it's knowing who you are, not just as a company, but as a business. Because I think, I mean, that's something that a lot of theatre practitioners often forget, that you have the craft on one side, but you've got the business on the other. So it's important to kind of merge the two and be able to kind of illustrate to, like, a random passerby, like, okay, this is who we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fair play.
Looking at your logo now that I've heard your story, it kind of looks like that person is Rory and this is what he was expecting that all-day breakfast roll to be. Yeah. But it's not what he got.
That's quite a nice way to think about it.
That's a nice little theory behind it. It's Rory sat on the egg forever waiting for
waiting for the rest of the brekkie.
Yeah.
Because you have the egg, which I think is like a really like crucial part of breakfast, and he had no egg.
Oh yeah,
just sausage, just sausage, and I think a little bit of ketchup.
No, there was no ketchup.
No ketchup. Fry.
But we're talking. It was a foot long baguette one sausage cut up into a half that didn't even fill the baguette. So this is where the outrage started. Back to
jail.
What was a guy coming? They got a lot to answer for.
Wow. All right. Okay. Moving on from this name and the weirdness, and asking a bit of more of like a serious question. So as a Liverpool-based company, what would you guys say like Liverpool offers creatively when you compare it to the rest of the UK?
Anna, you've been here also. No, but as like, we can go from our point of view for a year on, but yeah, you've been here a little bit longer. And also like you did drama at Liverpool as well. So you've kind of been in the scene while also not studying drama, which is also like interesting as well.
Yeah. You know what, I'd say first of all, obviously, since we all graduated from Lipa, they definitely are a really great kind of establishment, if you want to call it, at supporting their students who have left. So it's not the kind of situation where, you know, once you go through, it's a goodbye and you kind of deal with it on your own. I think they are quite good at trying to help out and give you links and kind of stay in touch with people who graduate from there. And so that, first of all, is great. Then also, I think maybe because of the size of Liverpool, obviously it's a city, but it's not that big, there is quite a great network of creatives. And I think people quite often put on events that it doesn't feel like there's such a divide of like, okay, people who do poetry are over here and they perform over here. People who come together with like do musicians, you know, like they kind of stick to themselves. I feel like there is that kind of cohesive sort of nature to it. There are a lot of things such as, you know, like we're looking into like Unity Theatre or I just think because there's a smaller scale to it, because Liverpool's a bit smaller. So once you're kind of delving into that network, it's a little bit closer together. Or once you make the connection, you can always collaborate with, it doesn't have to be other like theatre companies necessarily. You can merge in with other creators.
It's quite easy to get stuck in as well, and quite, like you've got comedy nights, open mic nights, a lot of poetry stuff, scratch events.
Exactly.
It kind of has like a good, vibrant feel about it. Like you were saying it earlier, weren't you, about being alive.
I guess at the end of the day, Liverpool pops off 24/7. Doesn't matter if it's Monday 10 a.m. someone is out on them streets singing along to the Beatles or whatever's going on. It is so lively, and there's so much going on. And I think especially in the theatre industry, it's actually quite up and coming, because obviously music's huge here. But in theatre, I think it's still got room to develop and grow, which is quite interesting. There's not really, let's say, established theatre companies like you've got up north with the Papi Shuel.
You've got like Middle Child in Hull. Like Hull, like I went to Hull, and Hull has like such a base of making like theatre companies like Middle Child, Silent Uproar, The Roaring Girls, Pub Corner Poets. So like I was around like emerging theatre companies that then now at Lipa, then studying. So it's seeing them grow to that full growth of them being a company that is out there with their name, I think is kind of that inspiration, what we kind of aspire to. And I think, as we found in Liverpool, there isn't actually
There are a couple of, like, Ugly Bucket are doing really well.
Yeah.
Then, the like, obviously, there's that whole different course, but that's different, like, Smith's Theatre. Do you remember when we collabed with them and they do Physical Fest and stuff? Yeah. So there are these kind of...
And the Liverpool Fringe Festival's started to... How many years has that been? How many years?
Seven, four, eight?
Yeah, like, it's now starting to, yeah, become a bit more recognised. Mm. Same with Manchester. So it's starting to, like... put it all together. I feel like after COVID, it's now starting to connect everything together because it does have so much in such a small space, which is nice because you get a sense of more of a collaborative sense and community. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, there's starting to become a bit more of like a focus on the North in like media and the arts. Like most notably, like the BBC moved to Salford. Like that, in the back of my mind, as you were saying, just rang a bell, and I was like, that seemed to be quite a big thing, how everything was kind of diversifying from London, and then all of a sudden outwards. So hearing about, like, these sorts of things of, like, oh, there are these little venues popping up everywhere where you can find all sorts of events and stuff, it really, like, shows how much of an impact, I'm not saying the BBC in Salford, but more so how, like, a spotlight is being placed on the North of England and that the arts are very much prevalent there, perhaps more than they were, but I use that as a placeholder.
I think they have to be as well, especially like the funding is not as filled up North, and I think also especially as theatre companies, like, you start to realise that you can't live the dream of packing out big theatres, especially straight away, or even, you know, to a mass extent, like getting, or even regional theatres, it's kind of pricey, and unless you're getting funding, it's an expensive game, and you're putting yourself on the back burner and out of pocket, and as a business, it doesn't make sense. So I think especially theatre's best also when it thrives in something different as well at the same time. It's not to say that, you know, some theatre, classical theatre spaces aren't beautiful. Like, we went to the theatre in Chester, and, you know, it's a theatre and it is so overpowering and overwhelming, it's beautiful. But then we found, we performed in Simon Says, where when we made it, we knew we was kind of making it with the mindset of taking it to the Fringe, to Fringe festivals. We're making it with that kind of touring mindset, something that we can put in a van, move, not too expensive, but also can, you know, one act, 1 hour. And I think, yeah, it works in so many other venues. Then you can put it in a theatre and it'll work, but you can then go put it in the Round, or we did it in the Pilgrim in Liverpool, which is a pub, and we just did it upstairs, and we kind of had limited lighting in that space, kind of like a pay what you can event. It brings a different audience, it brings a different liveliness, a different area to play in, and so much more exciting than sometimes than just being on stage, you're the audience, and sometimes can be that kind of, you know, distant, alienating effect, especially if you sat all the way at the back of a theatre, like, you've paid however much and you sat all the way at the back, and they're giving you, you know, go get your binoculars out, you're like, well, have I paid a ticket to come sit at the back of the theatre with binoculars? Like, what experience is that? It's not really any. There's no point probably being there. I shouldn't say it, but,
you know. You're not wrong, because I remember, I think when I was in Fanmyth, we had the lecturer Mark Leville, he had told us that, like, people can entertain themselves, they don't need you to do it for them. So what are you going to give them, and how are you going to get to these people who are entertained without you? So it's like finding what you guys do is very much, because yes, the going to the theater building is nice, dressing up for the theater is nice, and like getting that seat and getting that nice angle is beautiful as well, but at the end of the day, theater is a reflection of society, and if society doesn't want to come see you, you still have to be able to talk to them.
Yeah, it's so true. It's that communication, and also, like, yeah, it's kind of like you're saying, it's that occasion of being at the theatre, I think, that is a little bit off-putting. Like I come from Rotherham, and very much not a theatre background, like, very working class, so the theatre's kind of like, what, everyone goes to the cinema, if anything, because you're outpriced in the theatre, and also to go to the theatre, you've then got to get on the train to Sheffield, and then go away, and then you're paying £30 for something that you're gambling on, because it's not Disney or Marvel, for example, that's a confirmed, do you know what I mean? But it's a confirmed experience to some people that makes you just go, well, I know what I'm getting, or like, gonna see the Jersey Boys, or like the Lion King. It's a guaranteed experience, you know what you're getting. It's a confirmed thing, but sometimes you can't take that gamble on theatre, and at such a sometimes at a high price when it is in theatres, because they want to make that money. You know, again, it's a business. It's part of the game, but it's finding a way to reach different people that, you know, that are, I guess, put off by that occasion of going, oh, you've got to dress up for the theatre. And because I guess that is, there's something in that as well, that we kind of have this, when the theatre is for everyone, it is for everyone. So you should come wearing your trackies if you want, like, because you paid a ticket to get come there, and, you know, you deserve to see it just as much as anyone else, regardless of what clothes you're wearing or, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about the operational side of the company, shall we say. So, you know, we've alluded a little bit about how we manage the theatrical side of the company and the business side of the company. So talk a little bit about how you manage the logistics of the company. So for example, yes, you're all actors, but each of you will probably double up on roles such as, let's say scenography or production. So, I mean, I'm sure each of you have your preferences, but are these roles determined by each of your personal interests, or do they vary from show to show?
So I guess when it comes to actual productions and when we're making work, it's quite flexible. I think it is what we're interested in at the time. I mean, for the first production, Rory was adamant that he did a creative writing course before this, so he was adamant he wanted to write a show for us, which is great. And then we could put that together, and then we kind of all helped direct, and we all had different influences on the scenography and kind of how we could build this world in which Simon Says was in. But then again, for the new show that's coming up that we haven't actually spoken about anywhere, so this would be a world premiere when we speak about it later. It's a lot more flexible than that, because it's very much, we're going to go into a room, we're going to devise together, maybe someone will come in, we'll pick someone beforehand to come in and have a mindset of how we're going to work that day, how the day's organised, but really it's quite flexible, especially being four of us, it's not too many voices at the moment, so it's quite easy to say, I want to do this at this point, or I want to do this at this point.
Yeah, like, we've just been, just an easy example is the job that we're doing at the minute of getting the Simon Says poster ready for Brighton Fringe. Like initially I did all the kind of like posters and trailers for the first kind of like last year's, and then this year's I did something, then you edited something, and then I edited on top of your edit, and then me, Rory and Anna were sat in the other day, and now we've got four edits to kind of pick from, and there is kind of that democracy within also someone's job, and we respect that, but then also at the same time, you know, it's good to bounce off people and go, what do you think? Yeah, actually you're right, you know what, I'm gonna or sell me on it. And I think the way that we've worked is nice and flexible, but also with that respect for people's roles, and you know, but when that person is going, no, but you know, it's your call, it's your, but then like we said, when working on something new, I think it's whatever we're kind of interested in at the time. Like, we all have different backgrounds and kind of what, like, I've done a bit of costume before, so I was like, I can use that experience in what I'd learned. So I did costume. If it then becomes something that I always do, cool. But, you know, I'm not holding on to it, like, for dear life, going, but I'm your costume designer. Or, you know, Rory's not sat there going, but I'm the writer. Even had a conversation going, you don't think I'm writing everything, really? all right. He was just letting us know for sure. So, you know, so there's no pressure also at the same time. And we had a couple of days, like, devising in March, in February, and that was kind of we all took it in turns leading days and finding different things and then curating ideas of things that we was interested in to then kind of snowball moving forward. And then when we take that, but then also at the same time, we're balancing doing Simon Says. So then it is going back to that initial first stage of roles of then Anna being marketing and then sorting out all the marketing and advertising for it. But then sometimes like that's Anna's background. So it also makes sense that, you know, she would have that job.
But we'd also spread it. That, I feel like marketing is quite a big, it's a huge chunk of any kind of, not just a theatre company, for any kind of business. I remember when, basically, I did it as my undergrad course in uni. And as much as I hate, like, probably sounds cliche, but they were like, if you look around, essentially, marketing is everything. And in all fairness, like, it does touch upon pretty much any area of life, so it's, like, a quite big chunk. So we're all, you know, just, it is pretty malleable, that kind of side of it. Like, we all kind of look into the socials and just spread that workload as well, and like obviously posters come under it, and we'll like
like we have a day of like admin, like it's hard to get where we also can sit in a room nicely, but and do those kind of jobs, and but that's when also it is just like as a company we're just as four people I guess decided.
Yeah, it's weird because throughout any course I've ever been on, it's all focused on the theatrical side, actually being in a room and creating and devising, and then suddenly being out of that space, my God, the business work that comes into it is just like crazy. Like, it's probably a 60-70% ratio we're sat at the computer rather than being in a room devising, which is sad because it's not, well, it's great, it is fun, it is enjoyable, you can find ways to enjoy it.
But it tires you, doesn't it?
It does, it just tires you. And when you're writing application after application that you don't know if it's going to be accepted or rejected, and
you're
it's
doing all
just,
this for free, and then you're you're going out in your normal time and working at, you work late at night, I work days, you work nights and days dependent.
Oh yeah, aligning your schedules as well,
it's hard.
Basically, it's hard work. It's really hard work, and it's interesting. I find it really interesting that we're not taught about it, and it's something that we want to address as a company, actually, especially in the Liverpool region, the Merseyside region, is how to help aspiring artists and how to help them with the stuff that you're not taught in universities.
Because it does kind of feel like there is only that kind of, you're trained either as an actor or you kind of do a drama degree, and then it's dependent on what your uni teaches you because it's all slightly different, and then everyone's at different, and then they don't find a way to connect you then after. I think sometimes it does feel like universities have just kind of then they've got your and not all, I don't speak on all universities, I think, but then there is that, how are you making sure that these people that have spent this amount of money, that have given you all this money, are then not just in work filling quotas because they're earning money, are they doing the things that they are making that connection, and if not, is there a way to get this amount of graduates and this amount of graduates in a room? Hive, recently, there was a place in Manchester, they hosted like a scratch event at 53.2. And that was just like a scratch night for Northern graduates. And that was really cool to get in a room with other artists and graduates of the North. And I think it's about getting those networking places there, because there are people there. It's about, I think it's about connecting them together. And especially after uni, sometimes it can feel a little bit drifting into the unknown, especially while balancing the real world stuff of paying bills, and then you know you're faced with a choice as an artist or an actor of making that sacrifice of, but I need to pay bills, or but I need to write a show, but then it comes at a cost, and the cost is, everyone's under the same bracket now, especially especially after COVID, especially everything going up, you know, everyone's affected, like it's such a tight squeeze. So then to sit here going, the theatre, oh no, it does sometimes seem like, but at the same time, like you see how effective it is at reaching people when you get there. Like,
it's so rewarding at the end of the day. See a show that you've made, you've developed, you've marketed, and then you tour it and you get good reviews and get awards from it. You're just there. You're just, makes everything feel 10 times better, and it makes all the hard work worth it. And it's just putting your own show on, I think there's something special in that, something that you devised and created yourself, and that you've been a part of that whole journey as a four. It was just, you become closer together, and it's just so rewarding.
Yeah, and then to get to share it with an audience, there is that then, like, that nice, well, we was saying, especially after COVID, like, we want to get people in a room and give them an experience of being in the theatre again, and not, you sit there and listen to us, or just, you know, whatever it may be. We wanted something that at least you can engage with and feel like you're back in a space again with people and in a space with energy. I think we did do that, but that was the main aim. That was just our initial nugget to start with. It was like, we want people to have an experience back in and connect people together back in a space.
I think energy was like the key word there, where it's kind of like, we've been apart for so long. Like, I just want to make you laugh. I want to make you smile. I want to make you feel something that's like you can't get through a screen, which I think is amazing. Moving on. So are there any like practitioners that you guys like to use, be it intentionally or not intentionally, when it comes to like creating these shows? Earlier you mentioned that you took turns, everyone took a turn and like taking care of devising days and like leading workshops. So I think this question is kind of like directed at each of you as a specific like actor, practitioner, person, rather than as a whole.
It was this question we're looking at. Oh, are we going to do this one?
This one's going to have to be unintentionally.
Should we talk about the piece? What?
What did we bring?
What Simon says, I guess. Chekhov was Chekhov.
We didn't bring that. We were just
Grotowski.
I think we just took all our own influences, and they somehow ended up in the piece. I mean, there were techniques from Brecht in there. There were moments of surrealism and absurdism.
We improv some at times.
Yeah.
We had dance in there. There was days where we were choreographing dancers, we were doing stuff to a cha-cha slide. We was ready for that kind of journey of like we're all kind of from different backgrounds, and like I've worked with a lot of theatre companies and done some research and development. Like I really like how the Pappy Show work as a company. It's very collaborative with artists. So there's something in that, and not necessarily, and the way it goes and moves of what you bring is so valid to the piece too. And I think that then came out in the characters of then when we started pulling them out of who these people are, what do we bring to represent people? Because that's also within a lot of the play, it's about representing people. So it's like, what do we bring to it? And I think a lot of our experiences bring that to it. Like, Anna's very dance background. Like,
Anna's very dance.
What's your grade?
I didn't grow up here, so it was a different system. But I'm quite dancey. Do you know what? But it's funny because we bring all these things in, and you know, as you kind of said, like we're influenced by so many things that sometimes you might not even realize or label it as anything per se. But we just try things out, and sometimes when we recall of like. Where we started and what we tried and then maybe didn't work. And I remember looking back, we did, Arthur and I choreographed a dance like separately ages ago, and we were going to potentially put it in the show, and then we tried to do some physical work, which reminded me a bit of Frantic Assembly, to be honest, like trying to do lifts and stuff, and we've got footage of it, remember what we've done, but because there is so much that we tried out, and then looking back with the finished product being in front of us, you know, you're like, wow, oh my god, that was totally different, or you know,
yeah, like along the wave that it's got there. I think we somehow knew it was going to be that. We knew it was going to be a mishmash of stuff. Like there was going to be we knew it was going to be chaotic. There was going to be fighting, some dancing, like
very eccentric.
Yeah, except those descriptions, I was like, they're brilliant. It is literally that, so unintentional. And unintentional with half of it is like, I think like it was funny when, so like our fight scenes, we have a lot of fight scenes, even in, we did, we created like a spin-off from Simon Says called Shitface Santa, which was essentially like the same concept, like Santa's just gone off, it's not a real Santa, and the elves are like, oh no, we need to get Christmas back. But we made it a lot more audience participation, like drinking games were involved. And that was funny seeing it go from that to that. And we had another fight scene in that, and all our fight scenes have ended up very WWE wrestling style, which is like...
And what is that, Aiden?
Aiden, what's your background? Are you come from...
What did you do in your past life, Sunshine?
So in my past life, I used to be a wrestler. I used to be Rick the Model Armani. Armani, don't come after me for any copyright. I've made no money. You can't have
poor
any
Armani.
Of it. I've made nothing. You can't have it. So somehow all my fight stuff ends up weirdly WWE influenced. But I've always had this nagging thing that like wrestling needs to be in the theatre more, if that makes sense, or vice versa, because it is the theatre. I think it's just frowned upon because they're like, oh, it's fake. I'm like, what's fake? I'm like, what's that Batman film you saw last week? How real was that? Like, Gotham was Liverpool, mate. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what are you saying?
Yeah,
what are you saying? Fake?
I get you.
It's a mix of so many blends of you've been a stuntman, an athlete, you're working on stage, you're working on camera, while also making it as safe as possible, while making it look as well. Anyway, it's funny that that always creeps up. Mm-hmm. I then have to look at it as a wrestling standpoint, because I feel like sometimes stage, and it's probably not good for stage managers, health and safety, they're not, I'm not their biggest fan, is what I found out. they don't really like it when it looks more real than what it should be. But I find that it's that balance of like bringing that chaotic liveness of what wrestling has into our show. It's worked so far.
It's worked so far.
We're great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
You do a great spinning back kick. Your back kick.
Oh, that back kick was superb.
Anna's back kick.
I was very proud.
So we've talked about that your company is eccentric and has a sort of wonderful bizarreness to it. I think that's what drew Greta and I to it in the first place. It's the sort of, it's kind of like a USP that you got. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I want to know whether or not this, like, mismatch of wrestling, dance, chaos, who not, what not, Santa Claus is getting pissed, whatever, is like an integral part of your company. Is that something you're clutching onto?
I think it's an integral part of ourselves, yeah, actually. It's just our personalities. We get in a room and we just chat a load of shit and just see what happens, really. I think it's just we're such bizarre individuals that when we come together, that just gets pushed. And we hit this eccentric, wonderful bizarreness that you're talking about. And see, you say you saw that on our socials and that's where you got it from. That's just
normal. Yeah, we was like,
oh, is it? What is it actually?
We didn't quite just a Tuesday. It's fine. Like, but yeah, you're so right. It is. It's more part of us, and I think it's that. Yeah, that friendship with it. It's just about more about us than it is what work we're trying to make, because human beings are more relevant than we're going to make theatre for this or for this. We want to make theatre, and we hope that we can keep sharing our theatre that we make with you, and hopefully you'll come keep watching it, as opposed to really activism fighting theatre. Or because I think although theatre is all these things, it's all them things naturally. Don't know if you need to, because what I found, especially, it was building up to, I can remember having those early seminars when we was talking about what theatre we wanted to make, and I was like, theatre's got really preachy. Like, I feel like I'm going to church, and not in a bad way, but I was thinking and feeling that when I went in, during, and when I came out, and nothing's changed. But when I first went to the theatre, all my experiences and were just, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's just it. You have your first time, your imagination's blown, and then it's never the same. But I feel like it's not. I feel like we've just become really complacent with only having one way to kind of go. And I think the point of the theatre is to have everything, because it's the place where you can discuss it, come out and go, that was a load of crap, that, and that also should be part of it. You should be also, we need to see crap and what crap is, and to know what amazing work is, and to feel sad, and on all these things there's a place for everything. And I think we want to just make everything, and not, yeah, we want to make our work as opposed to something specific.
It's the most hideous question. I don't know about these guys, that when I meet anyone and they ask, what type of theatre do you make?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because for us, it's just, we never have a certain style. We never have a certain way of working. It's how we feel like on that day. So it's just the worst question. And it's people's go-to question as well, which is understandable. If you don't know the theatre, what type of theatre do you make? And I'm just there like, no clue. It just makes me look so stupid, and me not relating to the company. But it's just because we just have this way of working, which is just crazy.
I guess. You know, imagine asking like an actor, like, what kind of work do you make? They'd be like, well, I guess I make films, but then within this, it's I make all this work for a variety of reasons. Mm.
I mean, I think you guys can just go, we make chaos, and that's like enough.
Organized chaos.
Well, organized
just chaos, full stop.
Chaos.
Stuff.
Chaos. I like that.
Listen, we have got the three A's of all day breakfast. We've got Aidan, Anna, and Arthur. We're going to cut to break. We'll be right back.
Ho, ho, hello there. Bet you weren't expecting to hear from me at this time of year. Well, newsflash, Christmas came early. The past 2 years have been very weird, so surely this is nothing new for you. Come join my elves and I at Liverpool's bombed-out church on Saturday the 7th of May at 9 p.m. where we will get very merry. Or don't. You're lost. I don't really care.
Hi everyone. We hope you've got a break and you went to the bathroom, made yourself some tea, got some water. I don't know. Do whatever you guys like to do in these little breaks. But we're back again with All Day Breakfast Theatre. They're still here.
There we are. It's how live there. Like, we just had like a big post look. Yeah, hold on. Well, we're still alive. We're still here.
Sounds like they're a bit tired of us, but it's fine.
No, it was on edge. The police just flew past and we were kind of like,
they're coming for us.
Yeah, just in case.
Just in case. All right, so let's kick off the second part with a quite an easy question. So a lot of your focus seems to be going into creating work for fringe festivals and circuits. And these kinds of things usually have like certain rules and guidelines, like running time, you have a specific get in and get out period, and all of those like logistical issues, or as I call them, a fucking headache. Do you think like these logistics and logistical things, and like that you have to stick to this date, you have to be in this location on these times, do you think that like affects the way you create work and how Simon Says developed?
So we originally developed Simon Says for our final production, and these were the requirements we were given. We were given 15 minutes get in, get out, very basic lighting, very basic setup. So basically we were given 3 weeks to make a piece that was between half an hour to 50 minutes in length that had all the fringe requirements. So with Simon Says, it was just a given that after that, we'll just take it onto a fringe and we'll keep touring it in a fringe kind of setup.
Yeah, while working with it, yeah.
Yeah, our final show that we did with Simon Says was at a venue called The Black E in Liverpool, which is a fantastic little venue. But that very much went away from the fringe layout, which was interesting to see how it adapted. We had this immersive kind of pre-show. So coming through the building, and the building's a very old classical, it's at the top of Chinatown, it's got these humongous pillars as you're entering, and we're kind of adding to this kind of cult feeling, and that they were going down to our kind of dungeon area.
You're going on a journey to the space, you're not just in the bar having a drink. It kind of worked in our favour. That's what was kind of talking about, the venues kind of changing how it works in the space. Like, we did it at Greater Manchester Fringe at Salford,
the King's Arms
in Salford, and that was a really nice venue. And your man had a light on the side. What was it, like a mosaic? Oh,
like one of them church. What's it called?
Stained glass. Like, had a light in, and he could control it from his lighting desk. And then we staged a moment where Simon sat underneath it, and he clicked his fingers, and it came on. So it kind of adapts in the space of what, but it also it then makes it very fringe like in that sense of, show us the space and we'll come do it for you in the element of what you want to tell it. And I think because the show is kind of a show, the cult of Simon is presenting you a show of why you should join the cult and why it's great. So you have this nice element of it kind of seeming a little bit meta as well, because we was like, when audience were bringing in, like we started this thing where we would kind of like live stream as if he was part of, you know, this kind of outer reach that's going on. So it kind of changed within the venues, but Fringe, I think, is also a good place, especially early on as a theatre company, to get your name out, and I think also get yourselves a market of, you know, a core market as well. Like, these are people that go to fringes and they're there for the experience of seeing theatres. And I think looking at companies like Middle Child, especially when I was in Hull, watching them grow from a fringe company and doing other people's works, like I watched them do Philip Ridley's Mercury Fur in a flat in Hull, and it was great. And now they're completely gig theatre, own brand label. So to watch them go from that is really beautiful, to see that now they have who they are as a company and the work they make, but they've gone on that journey, which I think sometimes it is beautiful for artists to go on. Like a lot of like the Arctic Monkeys, like their albums from start to finish, you see them go as artists, and I think to see theatre companies do that as well is is a nice thing. I think that's why we're so adamant on not going, this is what we do, because we want to, this is us right now, but in 4 years' time, we will all be in different places and we should hopefully be maybe making different work. And I think that's the thing with the Fringe thing. It was interesting, like, we started with the Fringe, but in no way is it kind of what we're then aiming to continue to do. It kind of is, we'll aim to make Fringe shows as well continuously, because it's a good place to keep going.
It's an accessible place as well for audiences, yeah. I think, because I mean, you can either pay what you can, or really we'd never want to price a ticket over 15 quid for a Fringe event. I mean, we haven't priced over 8 quid yet.
No.
And I think it's a really accessible venue, but I think what it is about going to Fringe venues and changing the venue up is seeing the development of your own piece across piece to piece. We love that if our show was different from even the night before, if we change something on the day because something's not working, I think that's grand. I think it adds to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one for theatre has to be the same every single night. This live element is what makes theatre, and I think that's what Fringe venues bring to it. I mean, at Brighton, we have a 20-minute get-in, get-out, which is going to be crazy for us. It means we're going to have to redo our whole set and kind of change the set completely to make it work, because I think the least amount of time we've done is about actually putting a show in. You're probably talking 2-3 hours.
That's the difference of, like, the squeeze of what we have and the blocks and then the tech and then set. You got to do it all. Luckily now we're prepared now. It has got to that point where doing it, but then you don't give you as much time. And so, yeah, that 20 minutes is going to be interesting. It's how you get, I guess, you adapt to that. To that Fringe kind of lifestyle. But it also is, you know, it is great. There's something in that kind of being the place where things start to grow.
Yeah, requirements aren't a bad thing all the time either. I think it does take the work in different directions as soon as different requirements are thrown upon it. And that is really interesting to view as a creative. And someone that's developed and devised the piece, suddenly go, hang on, you can't do that. All right, what do we do now?
Yeah, what? All right, how do we do this?
And then you may find something that's better.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to go on for a
second. Me too, that's why I paused.
Yeah, uh-huh. I was like, hold on, where are we going with this? Yeah, sorry about that. No, I was just thinking, Fringe festivals in general are a very good place to kind of start and exercise, flexible thinking when it comes to shows. Because, Fringe venues are, I mean, at least to my knowledge, are designed to be, like a bit of a blank canvas. You're supposed to be able to go into space A at 12 o'clock for a show, leave, come back again at 7 o'clock for another show, and it's a completely different space. So it's a great opportunity for young companies to just kind of be like, okay, we've got an idea. Again, with Fringe festivals, it doesn't have to be a completely realised idea. If you want to, test something out, then it's the perfect place, I suppose. Because, again, it's pay what you can. People know that when you go to a Fringe festival, it's, like, a bustling hub, like a melting pot for new work. So it's, it's that sort of venue which is super, super useful for anybody who's willing to start out, I suppose. But let's talk a little bit about a certain show which is cropped up in our chat. Let's talk a little bit about Simon Says. So I want to know what Simon actually got to say. Could you give us a brief overview for anyone who's, you know, we're new to the company, we don't know your show, where the idea come from, tell us a bit more about it.
I guess we started off, we were all fascinated with the idea of cults. And we, even though we have 3 weeks to make a show, we were given a long time notice of this is what the requirements have to be. So we went away and worked.
Research in advance.
About 4 or 5 weeks of research solely on cults. And kind of decided what actually it was that drew us to cults and how cults could be represented in this new dystopian world, which also reflects politics and the society in which we live. And we came to this idea that there was this cult of Simon, let's say, and these four members of Simon's cult were putting on a play which Simon has written, he's directed, so it's very meta. And these were the drags of the cult. These were the worst members of the cult that Simon could put together. But the whole show is meant to be around on how we can get the audience to join the cult at the same time. So it's like an invitation into Simon's world and an invitation into the cult. And it's this exploration on why these four almost imbeciles, how they find living in this world, and kind of shows the detriments that being in a cult can do to individuals, because cults are becoming more and more prominent in the UK. I think we're over 1,500 cults in the UK currently, and I think that was in 2018. So I presume, especially with lockdown, people being lonely, that number could have increased. And it was kind of this exploration into how
this idea of what is a cult
that you can take people.
And we were definitely, when we were doing that research, it's interesting because there is obviously a certain connotation, and we think, when we think cult, I think automatically you assume, you know, your typical, I don't know, everybody has their own image, of course, but you think of a one thing. However, how is it different to sometimes people behave in a certain way, joining certain clubs, or
where you're continuously sharing the same news in the same think tank, which creates the same thinking, or question authority to the extent that there is an extent where you should, it's okay to question it.
Yeah.
You're never really taught it, like school is a yes sir, no sir. But this idea of what Anna was saying is, what is a cult? Like when you, especially now, there's a lot of the way that we label things in news, the way that things get politicized as left and right. It's kind of interesting because you would, if you pull it down to the behavior, it's cult-like behavior. So it's weird that this exploration of cults, and it is still about that, but then also is that reflection of, you know, four people with a ruling, and those things that power does, this power structure of I say, you do, and then where's the line? And I think the characters kind of then represent that. They represent where people's line is. You have the rebel that their line's very close, and it's you push me and I'm gone. And then you have the rule follower that is there to you know, till you say go, I'm always here. And it, everyone in between, I think there's that representation.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
I think that then people, after we showed it in Lipa, was then saying like it's interesting and it's not just about cults, it's about human behavior and the way that things happen because of the way that we're in structures, maybe, or the way that we're fed information. I think Simon, especially, like we focus on Simon speaking in a lot of spoken words, specifically because of the way language is such an important thing, as from cults to politics. If you look at the way that Charles Manson was talking to the people in his cult, you know, or the way that politicians carefully pick their words and the language that they use. Language is so...
It's so important. Like Malta just went through an election. We just elected our government this Saturday, and the language they use, everything is always so rehearsed and always so perfect to kind of create this image of them that they want you to see and believe and follow.
There was something I was thinking about earlier, actually, today, of like a certain three words, which is so interpretable, which is monitoring the situation. Like, what's it mean to monitor the situation? Isn't it a nice way to say you're actually looking and doing something? You're doing nothing? Are you like, you know, that sort of thing? But yeah, sorry, continue, tangent over.
That's the show.
But we wanted to take it, it was very important for us to take it in a direction that the audience don't expect. So we set it up in one way and then completely almost demolish the rules that we've set it up and taken it completely other way. Won't say too much more on that because we don't want to put any spoilers in case anyone fancy coming along to Brighton.
Just maybe personally a little ticket. Or where else are we in July?
We haven't announced that yet, have we?
We'll get to that bit a little bit later. We got a segment for that. Don't worry.
You got a chance to promote all your socials and plug yourselves and get tickets. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah. Well, should we be saying that? No. We'd be better.
Oh yeah. But from what I gather, it's making me think of you know, in America they have like the is it televangelist when you get the people on the telly who try and make you pay money to pray to Jesus or something. It's given me that sort of thought in my head, which, to be honest, I'm loving. I find it fascinating.
Like, well, looking at the way to
I guess to market it, and it's become so meta now that I guess the way that we can market it is come join the place. Like, it's an invitation to come join the club. Hey man, come see my deal. As opposed to just let us present you a show, let us show you a story on Cults. It's more come for the experience of potentially being there, and maybe you find it gross and. Yeah, I don't think you will. I think you'll have a grand old time, because I think that's also the thing. We want it to be a grand old time regardless. Whether you do or don't think about it, you should still have gone, oh, that was great, crack. That was how. Oh, that's part of it. Just more coming out with an experience, especially your first time back, probably, in a theatre. Like, when did we perform the first one?
Our first one in Smithport.
And that was end of August?
No, that was September. Start of September, right at the start of September.
So it was really
this is September 2021.
Yeah. So it was like really first coming back out into everything, into a post like lockdown theatre audience.
It was quite interesting when we were doing Simon Says, because it started off as a pure comedy. It was just meant for laughs and people to really have an immersive enjoyment where they're just back in the theatre having a fun time. And then when we expanded it from our original show and developed it, we had audience members saying that was a hell of a lot darker than what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And it starts off in this real fun light, and it continues with this fun light the whole way through, but there is a real dark message behind it about power structures and power structures in the country and how maybe power is just cyclical and that nothing really ever changes.
Especially if you look at, I always find it funny that we get to this position in elections where we're like, you've got to pick the best of the bad bunch. And I'm like, hang on. These are surely, apparently, the most important people. These decide decisions for everything, and we're nailing it to the best of a bad bunch. I'm sure when it comes to anything else, they're not, I'll get the worst two builders and I'll just pick the best of the worst two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine, why would you have two terrible builders between you? Why is that your choice? It always feels like we somehow get to this. And then when they get in, it never really changes.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, regardless of what you do, you can somehow, a la Tony Blair, stay relevant. Like, you can make drastic decisions that affect people's lives so much later on and still somehow be continuously making
it doesn't matter if you're in the country, you get knighted.
Yeah. Becomes that, but what, let's pull it apart for what it, could you really, would, Labour representing the working people, that's who they're meant to be, their party, would every Labour voter turn around and say, "Yeah, that man deserves to be knighted"? And who deserves that say that does become that? But it's that con of power of going, "Hey, come on, listen to us. Don't worry, we'll." And especially now, I feel like politics has got, look, they're really bad. Put us in.
All of our politics are, rather than an "I can do this to help the country," is look what they did. They're bad.
Look
what
how they corrupt did. They are. Look how this. And it's like, yeah, but so are you. Why? If the shoe fits, but stop playing. It becomes a, surely you should be going, here's why you should vote for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would be more convinced, as opposed to don't listen to that person because they're five labels, and because I've given you five labels, you now don't have to listen to them or make a conscious choice. And it's like, I think if we actually talk about things and discuss it and give people the opportunity to think, then they will probably actually decide, as opposed to just like, nope, don't look.
I'm going to link this thought to something we mentioned earlier, because you guys said that you don't want to make like preachy theatre, but through this whole explanation and through this whole fun, you found a message that is honestly like so huge and so prevalent in everyone's everyday life, just by being you and being quirky and being weird. And I think that's like the mark of like really good theatre. It's when you're doing it for the shits and giggles and because that would be fun and oh, that would be cool. But then in that whole exploration and fun and just being you, you kind of get to the root of who you are as people and to the root of your morals and your values. And it's like, you guys didn't write Simon Says to be this whole like spiel about structure and classes and stuff like that. You just wrote it to be fun. But through this fun is literally the best way that I think any working class person can learn, any doctor can learn, anyone, regardless if you have any form of schooling, if you're learning through play and teaching through play and kind of like exploring these topics through play, then you guys have automatically like hit the nail on the head. And even if one single person after seeing your show goes, that kind of mimics your life, I think that's like a beautiful, amazing thing you guys have managed to do.
Yeah,
that's
so.
Nice. It's wonderful to hear. Yeah.
And it's adding to that, it's also because we're all individual, we have differing views as well.
Yeah.
And it's where that line is between all our views that's where we come and meet, and that's what we want to do work on, and that's where the work's produced. And I think it's fascinating to have that voice that will say, no, I don't believe that because this.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to be in a room of people that will argue with one another and debate with one another for the right ways and for the right reasons and say, no, this is this, and have a real conversation into what it is in the world that kind of drives us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all very true. We find ourselves constantly, don't we? Like sometimes like getting in heat, that somebody else would be like, whoa, man. But that's how it comes from, that place of, that's how you see it. And I think because we're friends, it also, the beauty of making theatre and having those things is you can be vulnerable, you can be, you know, passionate, and those things can come out because those people also love you for all those things, and they get it because it's coming from the same place and an understanding, like you're trying to get to the same place, it comes from the same place of love. So it's always nice, isn't it, that we can get so heated and then still be like, cheers, sound.
That's really sweet. All right, moving on from like less subliminal things coming out of your fun wackiness. This was something that Toby did not shut up about. You guys mentioned that you want to create an actor's gym. Can you like talk us through what this like this thing would be and like what you hope to like achieve with it, and just, I don't know, just let us into your brains for a bit and what you mean when you say actor's gym.
So,
over to you, Arthur.
I think the actor's gym for us is about making theatre accessible for aspiring artists and creating a space in which they can train and continue training past university, but also where they can make work and maybe even put on shows. So I guess the whole concept of an actor's gym is having a space where people can train, whether that be weights, even weights, or physically or vocally, and having weekly masterclasses or even daily masterclasses, which they can come and attend. And this will be kind of put up like a gym, so it'd be a monthly joining fee that is accessible and affordable, and be a space for like-minded creatives in Liverpool to join together and create work as well.
Because I think sometimes there is that... I think at first it stemmed from our initial, yes, we want to make work, but then also, you know, as actors, could we just find an hour that we could all meet and read a play or do voice for an hour? And then we was like, well, why don't we make it for everyone?
Yeah.
Why don't we then start to build up a network of artists that have a place that they can come and with us and train and carry on working? The Pappy Show are really a good inspiration for that. Like they do weekly workshops that you can come and join, and it's such an inviting space to just come and work with a professional company that sometimes I think for artists, especially if you've just graduated and you're out of that loop, like, I mean, I was lucky, I had a bit of training where like at the Sheffield Crucible they have like a young company, so I had something that I still could do while I was maybe being a supply teacher for 4 days. I still had something keeping my foot in the door that kept me motivated. I think sometimes after you graduated, we want to provide like a space that keeps actors motivated and still feeling like they can.
Yeah. I think during our training, there was some of our tutors made a clear emphasis on the fact that it's an ongoing discipline. It's not a case of, okay, well, I've mastered the art of monologues. Like, that's it. You know, it just doesn't happen like that, because you have to continue with your physical warm-ups, you know, to take care of your pelvic floor, you have to do your stretches and stuff. And if you just don't keep doing these little things, and as simple as, it doesn't always have to be something like you have to, you know, yeah, memorize 5 pages or like do these sort of repetitions, not necessarily, but it just does anything. If you don't do what was it called? Deliberate practice or something. So practice that would be productive, meaningful practice, exactly.
Like we said, like with what they always gave us, like Musicians don't go like, ah, learn to play the trumpet now. Just
yeah, there we are.
Wait around for my audition to, you know, because you're going to be a little bit rusty and you might need tuning up. And just like, you know, I had an audition yesterday and it was finding that time between working and then personal life. And it's hard. So to have that space where actors feel like at least, oh, I can go work on it there for an hour. I've got time to get feedback from a couple of people that yeah. I want to, then that's what we want to build up. And it may be slow at first. We might only get one or two people, but hopefully as long as they feel like they have somewhere to come.
I think I often found just speaking to not just actors, but anybody who is into creative things or considers themselves artists, you know, with life sort of getting in the way, if you could say that, I guess. And, you know, you have to maintain that financial stability to some extent. Sometimes you don't have the time to, you know, you can't always do shows like every week, or you can't do something creative every week. And you start, obviously, you start to miss it. And sometimes there is that imposter syndrome. You're like, can I really call myself an artist if I hadn't been in a show for like a few months? Or am I really, I don't know, like, do I feel like a bit of a fraud maybe or something? Which you're not, but just having that space where you can engage in and you can practice that thing that you love doing, and you can you know, you can not only maybe like sharpen up your skills a little bit, but you can feel like an artist again. Because at the end of the day, why do we all do it? It's because that's how, you know, it brings you joy.
We get the joy from doing it.
I think this is very much a long-term project. It's what we want to do in the future. But kind of at the moment, what we're trying to push is this, I guess we call it an open door policy, where people can freely come and speak to us, talk to us about the industry, talk to us just about anything they want. And this be through contacting us on our website or just meeting us in person. Because we've been very fortunate to have grown like a little following in Liverpool, where people know us, and it's nice. And we want to really become a really open door theatre company where they can speak to us and just feel free and not kind of alienate ourselves.
Yeah, because I think sometimes we get really competitive with each other as well. I think my experience especially, like that sense of competitiveness, and sometimes we bring it more on ourselves of walking in a room and seeing everyone as competition for roles, or as opposed to like we're all artists and we bring our own little spice to the mix, like, and we're cooking something a lot bigger than, you know, just whatever you're bringing. Like, we're all valid and valued here, and we all add something different. That's the beauty, like, that's why. So getting a place for that, to have people to not see it like that. I think my mindset's only just gone like that, especially like through working with a lot of different people. You then start to go, wait, you bring something that's awesome, and you bring something else that I couldn't bring, and that's awesome, and you bring that and that's mega, and you bring that and I couldn't do that, and I bring a little bit of this, and okay, that might be all right, you know. But understanding that we all had that little bit different, and to not deter you from then going, because I think sometimes that hinders you a lot more if you're going into things seeing everyone as competition. And I think sometimes it's hard not to, if, like Anna was saying, you've not worked for a couple of months and then you have an audition, and then it's like you're fighting for it with your life because you don't know if you're going to get it again. It's the first one in 4 months, but hopefully we build it that place for creative people to feel comfortable and have that discussion if they have anything or they want to work on something, or because if we've got time, we would love to give it back to people, especially cause I'm sure we've all had people along our way that if it weren't for those people giving us their time, you know, we wouldn't be here either. So, and I think it's almost, why do we wait until we're right at the top to pass the information down, as opposed to like, surely we should think of it a bit like a relay race. Like, we've got past this stage, you have the baton, we're running for the next one, so don't, we're not seeing you as eyes on the prize, like, we're on to the next, we're giving you the info, passing it on. And this, I think there should be something a little bit better, like, as opposed to, well, it's only when you're world renowned that you then get to, because actually there's something in learning things from people that are just a couple of steps in front.
That is the most fabulous analogy I've heard. There's like a relay. I've never heard that, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
It makes a lot of sense, especially in terms of like, if you learn things from people who are already established, and if you're like at the last bit of the relay race, you get advice from people at the last bit of the relay race, and you're at the beginning. It's like, all right, what you may have done in the beginning may not be valid anymore. Like, you can give me all the information you want, but if you did this like 5 years ago, dude, the world changes.
Yeah.
That's such a really nice thing, I think, about people who do theatre, in the, I'd say, 99.9% of people will be interested, regardless of what stage they're at, in helping out someone else. So it's a nice kind of like way to give back. And yeah, even though you might not be as, let's say, established as more major names, like, you know, you have like, I don't know, Young Vic, Young Company, those sorts of things. Like, having those sorts of spaces, at least in my thinking, is more important than having the name attached to them. It's so it's a really nice idea. And, you know, who knows? It's an actor's gym. Maybe Armani Wrestler might turn up again. It's
See, that's all the beauty. If you want some wrestling classes, that can be it can be done.
For an extra fee, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. If you're wanting to know the tricks of the trade, it's going to be extra on your fee on the membership. It does hurt. That's all I've confirmed. It does hurt. So don't be thinking, it's all fake. Slap, because how do you fake a slap on the chest? Sorry, you don't. You get slapped on the chest. It's just how it is.
Yeah. Listen, we've reached that time of the episode where we got to ask you, we've talked about the Actors Gym, but All Day Breakfast Theatre, what is the next stage? What can we expect from you? What is this thing you've been going on about all episode that you want to share with us? Now's your chance. Go for it. Promote your socials. Say your piece. Spot is yours.
Shall we announce that we are performing at Bedford Fringe on the 23rd of July, and that will be with Simon Says, which is really exciting, and we're very much looking forward to that.
Yeah.
But we're currently in development for our new show, which is called Days Are Really Long, But Years Go So Quickly. And it's a show.
I'm just amused by the name. I'm sorry.
It's a really good name, because I'm like, shit, you're right. They do.
We feel like it's some like indie album cover from the 2000s.
It could be a Fallout Boy song with like how long it is.
It's then abbreviated.
Abbreviated down.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it's exploring the idea of peepholes and how if you travel through these peepholes, you can go into different universes and kind of an exploration into style and exploration into ourselves.
And it's been time.
And time, yeah.
Like how we was talking, I think it's how we first started like initially talking about like, how's it mid-March? How? But then at the same time, like, it feels like it's flown, but also I was having this thing with January where I was like, how is it only the second week of January? It feels like it should be the 30th. Then February flew by, and now it's nearly April. And I'm like, wait, what? And then all of a sudden you look back and you remember it's your birthday, and then you remember a year ago. And you can remember the definite year because of the date. And I think that idea of time then and looking through a peephole into time, we just started, just playing from there. So we're now like set on this idea of peepholes and time.
Can I ask, this is a genuine question. What's a peephole?
So, you know, like, you can put it literally in the sense of, you know, when you go to your front door and you have that little hole which you look at?
Right, because I thought you were going on about that, but then I thought you meant, like, some sort of, like really in-depth metaphorical thing, like, oh, we're going to go through a peephole, like a wormhole or something. I was like, no, like, the little thing. Okay, yeah. Yeah, this fascinates me even more. I'm sold. Yeah.
Yeah, currently we're playing with the idea that this kind of peephole is within a bed sheet, and you always have these Velcro sections which you can undo, and then you climb through a certain peephole in the bed sheet to get moved into the new world. But it is in quite early development stages. Yeah. We are just having fun exploring it, but we're very excited to see where it can go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the main thing at the end of it all. It's having fun. But yeah, listen, it has been a hoot having you on. Where can we find you guys?
Oh, do you know off by heart? Or should I get the list?
Get
the list. Because like,
we do know.
The gram
list—they're so organized. They have a list.
Yeah.
You have to like change them for different. Twitter's got one, and then Instagram's a little bit different because they don't want you having the. So they're all slightly different. What we're at.
So we've got a website, which is www.alldaybreakfasttheatre.com, and Instagram at alldaybreakfast.co. Facebook at All Day Breakfast Theatre, and Twitter at All Day Bricky Co. And we also have a Patreon, which is under the name All Day Breakfast Theatre, hopefully.
So
what do you mean, hopefully?
It is. If you search us, so if you're feeling like, you know, you want to give us some artists a little bit of money for making, you can get extra content.
Yeah,
and stuff.
What extra content?
We kind of looked
get?
It as like an extra way to just be able to then maybe go in the room for a day. So we give extra content out. What we got so far? We got
behind the scenes rehearsals,
clips of Simon Says.
We're getting kind of dialogue that we created and written, and spoken word that we've written is going up there soon.
You get a shirt. Yeah, you sign up.
Do get a shirt.
Yeah. How much would you say like standard basic membership is?
What would you say? I'm gonna stop all of you because I've just found it on Patreon, and their tiers of like on Patreon there's tiers. Their tiers are a breakfast burrito, pancake and golden syrup, and bacon and eggs. Guys.
There's more. There's
your packages, you know.
But still no sausage sandwich.
There is more. I know.
But there, yeah.
No one's quite signed up to that mega bundle yet.
You know, just in case. It's there in case you fancy it, you know.
Yeah,
take
your
chances.
I mean, listen, listen, people. This is free to listen to. Let's be real. But go and support people if you're listening. You may as well. There's stuff you can spend your money on. I think this is an ample course. If you have a fascination in peepholes, hey, this is your thing. I'm selling it for you for free. This isn't being paid. This isn't sponsored, but I will cash my check in later. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll send it. We'll send it after.
Yeah,
we'll send it.
Thank you very much.
No, it's no problem.
Oh, right. All Day Breakfast. Thank you so much for coming on. Aiden, Anna, and Arthur, the three A's and amigos. So forth, how much alliteration can I span into a sentence? We won't find out.
Toby, we're going to get you for all our intros and outros because the way you brought us in and out is, we could have done it better.
Get me a soundbite. We'll work it.
We're going to have to, yeah. But then you'll need a buyout per year. And then, so we'll negotiate that.
We'll negotiate terms.
Off the air.
Just after, man.
Yeah. Listen, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us so much.
Yeah, it's been amazing, guys.
We'll do a little shout out to Rory. I know he's very sad that he's
not here. May God bless him.
It will warm his heart
here in spirit.
It's all right, Rory. You will always be the man in the logo.
He's currently on the bench, actually. That's why he's not here.
He's just staring at
the sun. Oh, dear. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. It's been mega.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
cheers, guys.
Bye.
And that was Aiden, Anna and Arthur from All Day Breakfast. Listen, you can tell we had a hoot. I'm sure you had a hoot listening to it. You guys can give them a follow. We'll put all the information where you can find them. And yeah, seriously, go and support them on Patreon. It's only a little bit of money for, you know, I'm sure on a regularly subscription basis, but sometimes you probably won't miss it. And for artists, it really can mean an awful lot just to have that little extra support. So go and do that. Keep in touch with them. And yeah, thank you for listening, and we will see you at the next stage.